And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism audio show number 41. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text, as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes, on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. And I don't have any special announcements this week, but please do send in your questions by email to brian@dailybuddhism.com or by voicemail at 937-660-4949. And both the email and voicemail numbers, along with all links mentioned in the show, are listed in the show notes or on the blog, dailybuddhism.com. So anything I say that you want to follow up on, just go to the show notes and click on the links. But now let's get right to the show. We started off on Monday with a koan. It's one of the better ones we've had, called A Mother's Advice. Jiyun, a Shingon master, was a well-known Sanskrit scholar of the Tokugawa era. When he was young, he used to deliver lectures to his brother students. His mother heard about this and wrote him a letter. "Son, I do not think you became a devotee of the Buddha because you desire to turn into a walking dictionary for others. There is no end to information and commentation, glory and honor. I wish you would stop this lecture business. Shut yourself up in a little temple in a remote part of the mountain. Devote your time to meditation and in this way attain true realization." And then I asked, so what do you think? Was she right or was she wrong? I think this may have been one of the shortest posts we've ever had on the Daily of Buddhism, but it resulted in probably the most comments on the website that we've had yet. At last count, I think there were 17 different opinions posted. Some people think the mother is right. Some people think his mother was wrong. I'm not going to read all those here, but if you want to go to the website and look at the different opinions, see what you think. It was a lot more complicated question than I thought when I posted it. And then it was guest post time again. I don't have anyone lined up for next week's guest post, so if you're in the mood to do some writing, send me an email. But this week, we have Philip Miller, who first discovered Buddhism 50 years ago, but only recently came to grasp it. He's a member of the Heart of the Lotus Sangha in Princeton, New Jersey. Today, he writes about a chance meeting he had 3 years ago. It was an incident so powerful that he tried to record the gentleman's words from memory as he rode home on the bus. The Man on the Subway by Philip Miller. Last night I had one of those rare New York moments that intersected with the spiritual plane. I had boarded my customary E train at West 4th Street and proceeding uptown to 42nd Street and the Port Authority bus terminal for my ride home to New Jersey. The train was packed as usual, and most of my fellow passengers who were seated were either immersed in their newspapers or books or were dozing, and those who were standing were holding on for dear life in that packed train. At the next stop, 14th Street, an African-American gentleman got on. He stood about 6'4", built like a linebacker, and was nattily dressed in a modish suit, the kind that one might expect to see worn to church on Sunday. Even before the doors closed, he began to harangue the passengers like a Bible Belt preacher in a mellifluous and stentorian voice. The passengers, typical New Yorkers, seemed unruffled by this distraction on their commute home, and I admit I too wanted to tune him out. But his voice boomed over the noise of the train, and I found myself straining to catch what he was saying. Before we reached 42nd Street, I heard him say, "You are probably wondering when I'm going to pass the hat. Well, I am not. I only want you to do one thing for me. Please look at the person sitting or standing next to you and recognize the image of God in that person's face. Each face carries the beauty of God. We are all kind to our family and friends. But think about the beauty of God in that stranger next to you, and realize whatever kindness or selfless act you perform for any stranger only increases God's beauty in you. I'm not asking for money, only for you to see God everywhere and in everyone around you." At 42nd Street, he bounded off the train and walked with such enormous strides that I was completely unable to keep up with him, let alone reach to thank him for allowing me that moment of grace. No, he did not preach in the name of Buddha, but his words were clearly Dharma. Wikipedia defines Dharma as a spiritual and religious term that means one's righteous duty or any virtuous path in the common sense of the term. Further on, it says that it contextually implies one's religion and is presented as a central concept that is used in order to explain the higher truth or ultimate reality of the universe. It was once explained to me that Dharma, at its root, had nothing to do with religion and simply means experience, an event or happening. As such, anything and everything that happens to us is Dharma, and our karma determines our Dharma. The wise person learns from every experience, event, or happening, for even something that externally may appear to be negative has a positive side. The Dharma experience of hearing this gentleman at that time and place, as well as the message he brought, was clearly Dharma. Afterward. About 2 weeks after this happened, I was on the E train going uptown at about the same time of day. As I alighted at 42nd Street, I found myself in the passageway next to this same man. He had obviously been on a different car of the same train. This time I stopped him and thanked him for his message. Squeezing my hand in his, he replied, "How can you thank me for something you already own?" With that, he leaned forward, kissed me on the cheek, released my hand, and bounded away. Phil Miller doesn't have a website, but if you post comments on the blog, he'll be sure to see them. And the next day was Wednesday, the day after the presidential inauguration. And I, along with what seemed like everyone else on Earth, was watching the U.S. presidential inauguration on Tuesday and playing on Twitter at the same time. I was being a little bit negative, or maybe just a little overly realistic, when I asked a question on Twitter along the lines of, "Are we expecting too much? Can he actually do all this? Could anyone?" during the new president's inaugural speech. And as always on Twitter, someone called me on the statement, asking, "What does Buddha say about expectations?" Touché. All right then, what is the Buddhist perspective on expectations? Well, we've looked at being in the present a few times here already. Buddhists are supposed to live in the present moment. But it would be unrealistic not to have expectations and plans about the future. The real problem, as you can probably guess, comes from being overly involved with those expectations. Think about the greatest disappointments or the greatest sadness you have ever personally had to face in your life. I think, at least in my own experience, that broken expectations and disappointment in things that I had built up in my own mind have been the worst. If it comes right down to it, you can exchange the word expectation to attachment in most cases. And if you do this, you can already see where I'm heading. As Buddhists, we already know that being overly attached to anything is bad, and being attached to expectations may be the worst of all. Being Buddhists, we need to try to look at things as they really are by stripping away the illusions imposed by our minds. Take things as they come, good or bad. Prepare for the future, but make every effort not to be too attached to the outcome. It all sounds so easy sometimes, doesn't it? And then next, we had someone email a question. If you'd like to email in a question, send it to brian@dailybuddhism.com. We'd be glad to answer it here or in the emails. But this reader asked, "Recently, I've cut down drastically on my use of harsh language in an offensive manner, but I'm wondering on something related. My friends and I will ridicule each other and call each other unbelievably horrid things just to joke around. We all know it, and in case any of them ever take me seriously, I quickly make sure that they know that I'm joking, and it's all in the spirit of fun, which they then understand and we continue. What do you think about this? Well, I think this may be more of a question for a psychologist than a Buddhist, but I'll give it a shot. There are two ways of looking at this. You and your friends all know you're only kidding, and as long as no one gets carried away or angry, it's all in good fun, no harm done. I have friends that I snipe with as well. It's really just a matter of intention and how close you are. Still, it can very easily lead to other problems. It's easy to go too far and cause hurt. You never know when it's going to happen, but it can happen. And when it does, it'll be too late to correct. Everyone knows not to call children stupid and say other mean things to children. We all know that their self-esteem will be damaged. Adults do have thicker skins, but over time, it will wear through. Another thing to consider is that words, even in jest, have power. Constant repetition of certain words used as an insult will lead to real social problems. As an example, there's a certain derogatory word associated with homosexuals, the other F word, that I hear used constantly among teenagers. And this has to amplify any teen's fears or homophobia. If it's that insulting to be called one, then it must be really, really terrible to actually be one, right? It's very easy for words to cause suffering in subtle and not-so-subtle ways. Although verbal humorous sniping is usually socially acceptable in limited amounts, as a Buddhist, you need to think through the whole picture and decide where the fun stops and the suffering begins. And then on Friday, we looked at a little bit of history. Soyen Shaku, the first Zen teacher to come to America, said, "My heart burns like fire, but my eyes are as cold as dead ashes." He made the following rules, which he practiced every day of his life. In the morning before dressing, light incense and meditate. Retire at a regular hour. Partake of food at regular intervals. Eat with moderation and never to the point of satisfaction. Receive a guest with the same attitude you have when alone. When alone, maintain the same attitude you have in receiving guests. Watch what you say, and whatever you say, practice it. When an opportunity comes, do not let it pass by, yet always think twice before acting. Do not regret the past. Look to the future. Have the fearless attitude of a hero and the loving heart of a child. Upon retiring, sleep as if you had entered your last sleep. Upon awakening, leave your bed behind you instantly, as if you had cast away a pair of old shoes. Okay, and that's what Soyen Shaku did every day. I'd like to hear your comments. Does it seem like a good routine to you, or do you have a problem with it? Comment on the blog. I've already gotten one person who thinks that this is not the middle way. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. And that's it for this week's episode. It's a fairly short week this time. But remember, the Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and it's easy to help out. Just go to dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on one of the options there. You can donate as little as $1. If you choose to send in either $5 a month or make a one-time donation of $50 or more, you'll get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But of course, anything you send is appreciated and helpful. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism Daily newsletter is completely free. All you need to do is go to the site and sign up. If you have a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@replaymedia.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949 or post them in the comments section of any individual blog post. If you have any comments or remarks, agreements or disagreements, post them after the individual topics on the website. That way other people can see your opinions and discuss those as well. And in the meantime, I will see you next week.